Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro, and this week my guest is Scrivener creator Keith Blount. Keith, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, I remember reviewing Scrivener when it first came out. Right. It was a pretty neat program. I was very impressed. Let's just start off with a brief introduction for those who may not know exactly what Scrivener is, but we'll get into more details later. But just give us a brief summary of it.
Okay, so Scrivener is a writing app specifically designed for writing long-form texts. So, you know, things like novels, nonfiction books, theses, plays, and screenplays. So it's kind of like if you took a typewriter, a ring binder, and a corkboard and kind of smooshed them together into a piece of software. That's kind of what Scrivener is.
Cool, cool. When I first saw that, I fell instantly in love. And I thought, wow, if I ever write anything serious like a novel or anything like that, this is the tool. In fact, I've used it recently with the transcription tool, which turned out to be pretty handy.
Ah, brilliant.
So let's go back a ways. This was not your intended path, as I know from reading about you. What were you thinking about in college?
Yeah, no, not really. I didn't study computer science or anything like that at college. I studied history at college. So I'd had a bit of interest in dabbling in computers when I was, you know, a teenager on old ZX Spectrum and things like that. But I didn't touch computers for years. So I studied history and a bit later on medieval literature. And I was a teacher for quite a while, well, for a little while. And so, I wasn't looking at becoming a programmer at all, but it was just that my interests were in things like writing, and I gravitated towards computers a bit.
So did you fall into the Mac sphere at an early age?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was it. And I'd got this idea, because it's kind of like I was into writing, and I was also working on MA. And so I got this idea for a kind of writing program I wanted, and I had been working on Windows for a long time, and I'd kind of looked at maybe programming something on Windows, and it was all C++ and things like that, and various tools available for Windows. Just never really clicked with me. So back in about, I think it was 2004, the year my son was born, I bought my first Mac, an old iBook. And Macs came with all the development tools. They came with Xcode. And so I started dabbling with that, and I bought a couple of books on it. And that's how I got into it, really. I just taught myself to code from there. So I kind of just fell into it.
What books did you find particularly helpful?
There was a brilliant book called, I'm trying to get the names right, Programming in Objective-C by Stephen Cochran. He's got a new book coming out in January, I think, Programming in Swift, which will be the updated version of Swift. So I'm looking forward to getting that and getting more acquainted with Swift via that. And the other one was Cocoa Programming for Mac OS X by Aaron Hillegas.
He's famous. He conducts classes.
Yeah. What's it? The big Nerd Ranch he does,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, right.
So that was the book for that. And they're really brilliant complimentary books, actually, because the Programming in Objective-C kind of gave you all the core programming knowledge. And then Cocoa Programming by Aaron Hillegas gave you kind of all the UI style, the UI side of things, and using Interface Builder and that sort of thing. So they kind of just, I spent about 3 months going through those. And then I started dabbling, kind of putting a program together.
How did you feel about the art of programming? Is it something that you just kind of instantly fell into?
It was ever something I really expected to enjoy as much as I do. But yeah, I kind of love it. I love the kind of problem-solving aspect of it, that you kind of have an idea, and then you kind of work through how you're going to come at that idea. And yeah, I mean, these days when I'm programming, I kind of often think the problems through as I'm programming. So after 10, 12 years of programming, it's got to that stage. Yeah, I enjoy it. Yeah, I think it changes the way you think. I think, yeah, definitely in terms of, yeah, when I'm writing on something, I find it easier now to think in kind of in coding. It's strange. Yeah.
Cool. You dream in subcolons.
I haven't quite got that bad.
So I read a short thing about how you were frustrated and came to conceive of the structure of Scrivener,
right,
and what your frustrations were with the current tools at the time. Tell me about that.
Right. So, I was trying to write a novel, always trying to write a novel, but also working on MA and things. And the way I kind of work is I was working in Microsoft Word. I'd have various notes in Microsoft Word in different files, different snippets and different chapters or sections I'd have scattered around in different folders in the Finder. And to get an overview of that, sometimes I'd go into Microsoft Excel and I would kind of write little synopses of each of the parts I'd done, and trying to rearrange those synopses in a spreadsheet, trying to get a kind of structure. Or I'd use index cards to do that, I'd write down little synopses of my work on index cards and move those around. And I'd have various research that I needed to look at as well. And kind of doing all this, I thought, it's got to be, this is exactly the sort of thing that software can do. So, you know, there were a lot of apps out there at the time that would try to tell you how to write or how to structure things. But I think I wanted something that could allow me just to find my structure in the same way I was doing with, you know, analog tools. And so I was looking for something that would allow me to have all those sections in one place rather than lots of different files in the Finder. And that would allow me to associate a synopsis with those like I was doing with index cards and in Excel, but kind of have it all linked together. So if I was moving the synopses around in this program, then it would also restructure the, you know, my actual writing. And I could also have my research in there right alongside my writing as I was working. So it was really all those things. I figured there must be a program out there that did that, and so I set about trying to find it. And there were some programs which came close, but nothing that did exactly what I wanted it to do. So it grew from that. I started teaching myself to code in order to build this program, because I couldn't find a program that did what I wanted.
Is Scrivener particularly good at doing bibliographic, if I can get that word out, references that researchers do at the end of their papers? And
It hasn't got bibliographic tools. You know, let me take bibliographic tools built in, but it works with things like, you know, EndNote and Centaine, things like that. So people, and Zotero, people use third-party tools with it to do that sort of thing.
So tell me about how you launched the first version of Scrivener. Was it a banging success from the start, or did it kind of take a while to ramp up?
I mean, it's grown quite a lot. So, I mean, I look at what we're selling then. It was a lot less than we're selling now, but it was a lot more successful than I ever anticipated it to be. It was because it was something I built for myself from a get-go. It was something I wanted. And so back in 2005, I'd been working on it for a year back then, and you have to learn, taught myself to code, built this first version, and I put it on the forums of National Novel Writing Month, asking for people who were interested in testing it. And that's how I got my first users. And then I went back to the drawing board after some initial feedback and me realizing it was quite broken up into different, it wasn't really very integrated with various components of my app. So I rewrote the whole thing from scratch again and launched it in January 2007. And I was expecting, I was thinking, okay, if I sell a handful of copies here and there, you know, that'd be nice, extra bit of pocket money once time. Yeah. Whilst I'm teaching, it'd be nice to have extra pocket money. And, but, you know, within a year or so, I was making more money out of Scrivener than out of teaching or anything. So, yeah, it was a lot more successful than I anticipated.
How did you decide on your company name?
I'd always wanted to, when I was younger, I had this idea of opening a, you know, bookshop come cafe. We didn't have many of those in the UK at the time, and I spent a month in America in my 20s and really enjoyed the various coffee shops come bookshops.
That's a common fantasy. There's something about the culture.
Yeah, exactly. Really make no money out of it. So I kind of thought, okay, it's going to be called Literature and Latte. That'll be my coffee shop come, you know, come bookshop. So when I came to come up with a company name for Scrivener, I just used that, and it was just, you know, I didn't expect to sell many, so I use this kind of homely kind of company name. And so that's where it came from. In retrospect, I wish we'd picked something a lot shorter that would be easier to type or tell people when they ask my email address, but there we go.
There must have come a tense time when... Were you married at the time when it was released?
I wasn't married, but I was with the person who became my wife, and we'd had our first child by then.
So there must have come a tense time when you were thinking, you know, this looks like it could take off, but it could fail, and I've got this nice stable teaching job, and I'm going to have to submit my resignation and then kind of put myself out there with Scrivener. Is that how it went? Was there an anguish?
Not really, because it kind of happened at a natural time, because I released Scrivener, and about a year or so later, we wanted to move anyway. We were living in London. We've been living in London for years, and we wanted to move down to Cornwall, which is where Julia, my wife's family are. And we wanted to bring the kids down here because it's got the sea and it's a beautiful countryside. So we decided to move down here anyway. And so I had to leave my teaching job in London. And it's not very easy to get a teaching job in Cornwall before you've moved here. So I had to move here and look for a job anyway. And so when I moved here, we kind of realized that Scrivener was making more money. So it was just a natural decision to kind of stick with Scrivener and see how it went before looking for a teaching job, another teaching job. And so, another teaching job has not materialized. I just haven't looked for another teaching job because Scrivener has turned into a full-time job and company.
Yeah, as we know, it's really taken off. So how many copies have you sold over the last, 10 years?
Yeah, it's 10 years. 10 years in January it'll be. Yeah. The Mac version, or the Mac and Windows version, it's about 500,000, something like that. Over 500,000.
Oh my goodness, that is fantastic success.
It's quite surprising that we've done so well with it. Yeah.
So how many on your team now with all that success? You must need a lot of people for support and for maintenance coding and things like that.
It's 12 of us, but it's we're broken up kind of weirdly. So there's quite a few of us are part-time. There's only about three or four of us that are full-time. I think it's four of us at full-time. And then we've got people around the world who work part-time. It's 12 of us in total.
So there's nobody on site with you? You just work
by yourself? No, that's right. Yeah, we work in offices around the world. So I work in an office above our kitchen. It's just come back from school, so I'm hoping we're not going to be screaming. But so I work in an office above the kitchen, and we've got there's a guy who lives in Portland who's just moved to Spain, and I've got someone who works just down the road from me, actually, a friend of mine who was the first person to join the company, David. So he doesn't live far away, but everybody else is. We've got someone in Bulgaria, someone in Australia, it's US, Spain. So yeah, we're scattered around. But it works quite well because everything's, we're an internet company and we do everything by internet. So there's a lot of trust there. We have to, know that we can rely on each other to get things done. But it's a good team, so it's not really a problem.
Tell me about your Mac setup. I assume you do your primary programming on a Mac. What's your Mac of choice?
I'm on an old Mac Pro, actually. It's one of the, it's not one of the new kind of chicken Ballantine shaped ones. It's not what you would want.
Oh, the cheese grater.
That's right. It's one of the old silver cheese grater ones. I really need to update it, but it's been such a good machine. It's lasted years. So I'm still on that and a cinema screen for my main programming. Uh-huh. And then I've got a MacBook, which I use for everything else.
I still have my cheese grater Mac Pro, the 2009 model. I passed it down to my wife, and she's got Linux running on it, which runs great.
It's a great machine, yeah. Is it about the point where I do need to upgrade and look at one of the new Mac Pros? I was kind of hoping they would come out with a new update for that soon, but still waiting on that.
Do you have eyes for one of these new 2016 MacBook Pros with the touch bar?
My wife has just got one, actually. So we've ordered one for her, and I'm going to be looking at that because I need to update Scrivener to support the touch bar. So I'm going to be using hers a little on and off to try and work out what icons we can use and what features are going to be good for Scrivener and that touch bar.
Do you think that the touch bar is something that is going to be a great addition to Scrivener, or do you think it's just something, I'll play around with it and see if I can do a few things and support it?
I don't know yet. We just received a machine 2 days ago, and I haven't had a chance to mess around with it. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to playing around with it and finding out more and seeing what the possibilities are. I mean, I get a feeling it's just going to be kind of like an extra, extra toolbar. So you've got some extra features at your fingertips. It's just depending what features will be good on the keyboard that you couldn't have had before, I guess.
Yeah. The verdict is out, where people are still kind of figuring out whether this is the next big thing, or whether it's just sort of a minor thing and will, be played around with for a while as a gimmick. Nobody knows really yet. Apple has great expectations for it, and I think my hunch is that it's a stepping stone towards the next generation of computers.
Yeah, we should see where it goes.
iPads and Macs sort of not merging, but sort of gently moving towards a new UI in some ways. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Okay, well, this is a good place to take a break. When we come back, I want to ask you about some other things about Scrivener. But first, I want to hear from Kelly. We've got a short commercial break. Folks, we'll be right back in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Hello there, all you fabulous Background Mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage, where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? and you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thanks, Kelly. I'm chatting with Keith Blount of Scrivener fame. So I'm curious about the sort of the worldwide penetration of Scrivener. First, is it, how many languages is it localized to?
Not many at the moment. So it's only, other than English, it's German, Spanish, and French in the Mac version. I think the Windows version has got a couple of extra languages. I'm not sure offhand what they are. And the iOS version is English at the moment. But so one of the things I've been doing in the past few days, in fact, is getting all the files ready to have the iOS version localized, and also our next major Mac update to be localized. So we want to get those localized into more languages.
Yeah, I have some questions for you about the iOS version. We'll get to that in a second. Okay. So it's mostly used in the United States and Europe right now.
Well, I mean, we are used all. We've got quite a few German users and other language speaking users. But yeah, it's mainly United States is our biggest market, definitely.
Do you have any plans to expand it for example, Chinese or Russian or anything like that?
Yeah, we want to, definitely. We want to get it translated into those languages. It's a bit harder to get. Into languages that where the language is flowing the opposite way, you know, right to left languages. Right. Apple have made the tools a lot easier over the past few years to do that. So I think it's going to be easier to do that with the iOS version, purely because that's been built on a much more modern base than the Mac version. So there's so much legacy code in the Mac version. It's constantly trying to bring it up to date. But yeah, we do want to get that done.
So we've talked about your history of the development of Scrivener, but we haven't really touched on sort of the major thing about Scrivener. Well, we have in a way. We did that in the introduction. But if you were talking to, a science fiction writer and he hadn't come across Scrivener before, how would you say to him in a couple sentences, like, this is what you need to be using? Forget Microsoft Word. Forget text editor. VB Edit. Forget that. This is what you need to use and why. If you were to do that in a couple sentences, how would you do that?
A couple of sentences. That's hard.
Yeah, three or four.
I guess I would say that it's been built around like that, you know, the way writers work, rather than it's not built for writing a newsletter and things like that. It's built around structuring of a long text. So it's been built around the core components of writing, organization, research, and then getting your work out there. So it's built to act a bit like a ring binder, where you can write your text in lots of small or large sections in any order you want. So you can find your place for it later. You can write a scene and then find your place for it later if you wanted to. And it's also built in a way that you can write in the way you like writing. So if you're someone who writes from beginning to end, you could do that. You could write, you know, first words, get to the end, and then you could use Scrivener's organization tools to then restructure and find better ways of structuring that text once you've written it. Or you could, you know, use its outlining tools to write a big outline first, and then refer to your synopses alongside your text and fill in the blanks like that way. Or you can do a mixture of those things. And if you've got research you need to look at, you can bring that alongside your writing. So you can have your text on the left and your research on the right. And then also, you know, it allows you to kind of work in any format you want. And then you can take that your work out, and you can take it out, you know, ebooks and PDFs, and you can worry about the formatting when you get to the end of it. It's really built, you know, it's built for the core of writing and splitting your text up and merging it back together. If you're working on a scene, you can look at that scene in Scrivener on its own, or in the context of a chapter, or in the context of a whole book. So yeah, I guess it's just built around the core mechanics of writing a long text, rather than just, you know, something short.
One of the keys to writing a book or novel is the demands of the publisher and what formats you can export to. And Scrivener is pretty cool about that. Can you list a few of the famous book publishing formats that it exports to?
Well, I mean, you can do what you want with it. I mean, it can export to all major file formats. So you can take it out to a Microsoft Word file, and you can or to PDF, and you can have it formatted like a standard manuscript format, either in, you know, Courier double spaced or Times New Roman double spaced. And it doesn't matter what you've been writing in, you can write in any font you want and format. You can then take it out at the end of the process and have it exported in standard manuscript format. But you could also, if you're self-publishing, you can send it out to a format, you know, a paperback-sized book formatted in a nice font, and with all the, you know, recto and verso pages all set up nicely, so you can send it out to something like, I mean, Amazon's CreateSpace and self-publish, or you could, or you can export it to EPUB or to, you know, Kindle Mobifile and have it all formatted that way for your self-publishing. So at the export stage, there's a lot of options to
Mobi's important. Isn't that the format that Amazon wants if you self-publish a book at Amazon?
So you can format it for Amazon and get it and sell it on Amazon. Yeah.
So tell me about the Windows development, because I know you found the Windows development when you started for a little frustrating compared to Xcode. There's lots of stories I've run across about that, and I'm curious to know more because people often complain about the frustrations of developing for Windows. Maybe it's better these days.
I did not myself develop a Windows version. I didn't think I would have done it, to be honest. I was happy doing the Mac version. And what happened was a guy called Lee Powell came to me a couple of years into Scrivener being out on sale. So it'd been there about 2 or 3 years. And he came to me saying that he wanted to develop the Windows version. He was interested in joining the team and developing the Windows version. So he came on board, and we worked out a profit share agreement for him to do that. That's where we did it. So he's really invested in it. So he took that on board, and he's got another coder that works with him. He's going Bulgaria. So Lee's in Australia. His other coder's in Bulgaria, and they took on the Windows version. But I know it was a lot of stress because there's, you know, on the Mac, you have got Xcode, you write in Cocoa, you used to use Objective-C, you now use Objective-C or Swift, Swift has become more popular. But on Windows, there were so many different tools, there used to be MFC, then there was VisualNet, and then several tools that Microsoft have released over the years. And so they use Qt, Qt, I think you said Qt, but so they used a cross-platform development kit to work on the Windows version. But it was more difficult for them because there's things like Scrivener is obviously being a core writing program. Apple provide a rich text system out of the box for developers. So although I've customized that quite a lot to add footnotes and various other things that you can do in Scrivener that aren't out in the core kind of frameworks that Apple provide, the core is there for you. You've got this kind of nice framework that saves to RTF and other formats and allows you bold and italics, bring in images, etc. Whereas Lee had to pretty much write their own rich text system from scratch, and they had to write their own RTF exports. So they had to do a lot of writing things that I didn't. I had to modify a lot of things which they had to write from scratch. So it was a longer process and a more painful process for them. And there's still areas which they still are having to rewrite certain areas under the hood, which is a lot more difficult for them.
But the two apps are functionally equivalent in most ways.
Not most ways. Mac version is still ahead of the Windows version at the moment, so that's why the Mac version is $5 more expensive than the Windows version. When we brought out the Windows version, we deliberately priced it $5 less because we know it's still on catch-up, and we're aiming to have feature parity in 2017. So in 2017, we're going to be releasing a version 3. So at the moment, it's Scrivener 2 for Mac and Scrivener 1 for Windows. And in 2017, we're going to be releasing Scrivener 3 for Mac. And later in the year, we're hoping to jump. What the plan is to jump a version and go to Scrivener 3 for Windows and have them at feature parity.
Does NaNoWriMo tend to boost your sales every November?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, we sponsor because we got our first. As I said earlier, we got our first users from NaNoWriMo, and so now we sponsor it every year. It's really nice to kind of put back into that. We're one of the big sponsors. And as part of that, we offer a 50% discount to anyone who makes 50,000 words. As part of National Novel Writing Month, you write 50,000 words over the 30 days of November, and so anyone who is registered with the NaNoWriMo sites and gets their word count validated by the end of the month can claim a 50% discount on Scrivener, and we still get lots of take up on that each year. It's really nice to be part of that, and it's really nice to see lots of people writing their books in Scrivener as part of that.
Cool. Well, the Mac Observer wrote about how you released the iOS version in July. I regret I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. I've been so busy.
Right.
But that's earth shaking, the iOS version. How is that going?
It's going really well. Yeah, I mean, it was many years overdue, as you probably know. We started work on it ages ago, and it just took. We had other developers working on it. I wanted to do it like the Windows version, have someone else working on it to begin with, and it just became a bit of a development sinkhole. So eventually I took it over. I took it over in 2015, sorry. So I took it over at the end of 2015, rewrote it, and we released it in July. And yeah, it's been really good. It's been really successful. It's been really happy with it. People seem to take to it well. So yeah, it's nice to have it out there, and it's nice to have an iOS version at last.
Were there any features in the Mac version that were sort of difficult to deal with in iOS because of its security and sandboxing and so on?
Yeah, I mean, sandboxing is a problem on the Mac App Store version as well, because that, you know, that does limit certain things.
Right.
With the iOS, so, you know, in terms of, say, being able to work between applications or refer to external files, that can be a problem. But with the iOS version, it was more a problem of, you know, the iOS hasn't got as many features as Mac. It's not as fully featured. You know, the frameworks don't have as many features, can't do as many things. It's, you know, it's more simplified. You've got more memory limitations. So, and also, you know, the interface on iOS, being a touch interface, is kind of flatter. It hasn't got as much depth in terms of, you can't hide as many things away. It's much more all on the surface. You know, on the Mac, you've got all those menus, so you can add lots of extra features that just get tucked away in menus that people some people might not. You can hide them away. So with iOS, it was really a matter of kind of going back to the drawing board and thinking, okay, what are the core features that I wrote Scrivener for in the beginning, you know, years, you know, 10 years ago, and I was sitting down, I wanted to write the program, what were the features I wanted it for? And how can I translate those to the touch interface and, you know, and still have it sync with Scrivener for Mac and Windows, obviously. So it's really going back and thinking, what are the core features and what are the other features we can have without it getting too cluttered? So it's a lot. Yeah, it's got, you know, we brought a lot of the core features across, but it's never going to have as many features as the Mac or Windows versions, where you can, you know, tuck a lot more away.
Right, right. Well, you started this, you said, in 2015. Swift was out by then. Did you decide to start in Swift, or are you planning to do that in the future?
No, I haven't had time to move over to Swift. I wrote it in Objective-C, so it's still Objective-C. Swift still has a bit of an overhead in terms of, I think this is still true, it certainly was true of the last iOS version, but Swift apps have to kind of build the Swift runtime into them, I believe, so they tend to be bigger. We're still moving along that trajectory. So at the moment it's Objective-C. I've still got to take up with Swift myself.
You can still write a pretty darn cool app in Objective-C. There's nothing wrong with it.
Oh yeah, there's nothing you can't. You know, there's not really anything you can't do at the moment. Yeah. It's just a matter of whether Apple at some point are going to deprecate it and say, right, we want you to move on to Swift. So I'm really looking forward, as I say, the Stephen Cochran book coming out in January. But I'd learned Objective-C from him, so I'm looking forward to seeing his Swift book and pick some up from that. And hopefully, because you can, if you're careful, you can mix and match Swift and Objective-C in the same project. So the plan is, if Apple are going to eventually deprecate Objective-C, I'm kind of hoping they don't. I really like Objective-C. I've been programming it so many years, but I do need to learn Swift. So I'm hoping to bring some Swift files into my, you know, my Scrivener project and mix them together. But Scrivener for Mac needs a bit more modernization before I can do that, but on the iOS version I could do that anytime, really.
Well, I don't want to pry into your financials too deeply, but I think the listeners would be curious to hear about how the iOS version has taken off since July. Do you see it sort of on a trajectory that could someday swamp the Mac version, or is it right now sort of a supplemental thing because of its limitations?
At the moment, it was designed so that you can be used in isolation. You don't have to have the Mac or Windows version to use it. And we've got users who haven't got the Mac or Windows version, but just use the iOS version. But so far, it's going to be sort of supplementary, just because, I mean, at the moment it's supplementary anyway, just because you can't do as much on iOS, but you can do things. You can do an awful lot on iOS. So it is capable of you're just using this as your writing app. But I think in terms of getting apps out there, but I think there's still more money to be made on the Mac and Windows, and not that, you know, money is a primary motivation, but obviously to keep the business going, I think businesses tend to do better on Mac and Windows. There's so much on iOS, it's really difficult to find stuff on iOS. So I think at the moment, as things are, people have already heard of us before they're going to the iOS version. So that's why it's kind of supplemental at the moment.
Okay. So the Mac version is $45. The PC version is $40. And the iOS version is?
$20.
Okay. Yes. Perfect. So I noticed when I was looking at your website that you have this interesting link. I saw that the first time I did a review of Scrivener. I think it was 2011. And I was very impressed by this page called Links for Writers. And there you have a link to every writing tool known to man, all of your competitors. I was very impressed by that. I think people who are Scrivener fans are impressed by that. What kind of feedback do you get on that page from people? Because people don't tend to, you know, talk about their competitors very much these days.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny. Yeah, cause, I mean, it's funny, actually. I see that page, like, reused a lot. It's reused on, you know, some people just copy it and put it on their sites. A few years ago, I had to put Scrivener, actually, I put Scrivener now on that page because I realized that was our kind of top hit on Google was links for writers. Here's lots of apps for writers. And people would go to that site and Scrivener wasn't listed on it. You know, wasn't listed there because we were just listing other writing apps. So I ended up putting us on there as well. But the idea behind was it was really, I've never really been interested in that whole kind of hard sell. Come on, use our app. Just I don't want to get sales from people who haven't tried it and don't already.
It's very collegial.
Like it.
It's very academic. Yeah, and it's very respectful, and it just gives you a good feeling.
Yeah, I think it's important that people are aware. Like, I want people to go and try the competitors, not because I'm arrogant about it and don't think they're going to try the competitors and not go to them, but because I want them to choose the tool that's best for them, and then we're more likely to have happy users if they've tried other things. I know Scrivener's for them, and they're more likely to recommend us and be happy. But, you know, I've got a lot of respect for a lot of the competition. There's a lot of good applications out there.
That is very cool. That's a way to grant respect and earn respect at the same time. Keep on doing that.
I think there's nothing worse than seeing people talk down competition, you know, talk about someone trying to big up their own program at the expense of someone else. There's room for everybody, you know.
Yeah. And different people need different things.
Absolutely, we're doing different things. You know, you look at people like Ulysses; they do a great writing app, but they've got a very different approach to what we do. So, I think there's a lot of crossover, but there's a lot of people are going to choose what people are going to choose them. Probably aren't going to choose; they're not going to really fit with what we do anyway. And people who choose us might not fit with what they do. So, you know, it's best people try them both and see what's best for them. Really,
is there a Scrivener for Dummies book yet or coming?
There is. There's one already. Yeah, but Scrivener for Dummies by Juan Hernandez. So, yeah, that's in the shops and
excellent.
On Amazon. Yeah.
Great place to start if you're interested in learning about it. So with 500,000 copies out there, there must be somebody somewhere who's thinking, boy, I'd sure like to buy this company. Has anybody tried to make you an offer?
I haven't really had any serious bids. We've had a bit of, like, was a bit in, you know, I can't really name names, but we had interest from, like, a company that works on script writing software. We had a bit of interest from a big company that sells books online and other things. But it was just more like kind of, so kind of sniffing us out and kind of asking around, but no, there's never been any really big, serious offers. But we've never really showed much interest in that because I like running this company. I like it as it is.
I sense that you got this team of 12. They're all over the world. You're having a great time.
It's expanding.
You're building the iOS version. You're just having too much fun.
Yeah. Well, it's not. You know, it's the thing is, it's if we sold it. And then if I had to stay on as an employee, then he's back to being an employee, aren't you? And you have to go into an office maybe or deal with team
fun.
Of people. So, yeah, exactly. At the moment, it's kind of the software's kind of mine and my team and the company is ours. And it's
So, any thoughts about what's next here before we have to finish up about maybe expanding the company or new projects? I know you have another project. Another side app, what's it called? Scapple.
Yeah, so Scapple, at some point, I'd like to get back to iOS one day. But at the moment, my focus is on making some improvements to the iOS version or adding that, localizing that. And the big project at the moment is Scrivener 3. So that's taking up a lot of time at the moment.
Yeah, that'll keep you busy for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's next year. And so, really, you know, we've got a minor rebrand next year. Not a rebrand, we're just having a big refresh of the website, kind of modernizing everything. So we're trying to make everything look a bit nicer on there for our users next year. So there's a few big things we're doing next year. We're hopefully evolving. I've not really any interest in turning it, like we were saying before, into some big company with offices and things. So it's just going to carry on with hopefully naturally growing and hopefully Scrivener 3 will do well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds like you're on a great path. So we're about out of time, and I think we've just about covered everything. This is a great story. Thanks for sharing with us.
Okay. Thank you.
If the listeners or the customers would like to contact you, how's the best way to do that? Twitter, email?
Yeah, we're on Twitter at Scrivener App. We're also on Facebook at Scrivener App. And then our website is literatureandlatte.com, and we've got contact details on there.
Cool. Well, thank you for joining me on the show. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Keith.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And listeners, thank you very much for coming by. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next time on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.